This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. We thank you guys for joining each and every episode. As I say, every single episode, we love being able to deliver some really cool content. And today is no exception. As we've changed up the podcast over the last couple of years with the pandemic, my goal is to continue to bring out some of the unique product offerings that are out there in the market that I think everybody should be looking at. And today is no different. Today, we are joined by the founder and CEO of a product called Zenput. Vlad, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit to our audience, and then we can talk a little bit about what Zenput is and what it does for people.
Sure, and thanks for having us on today, Jeremy. So my name is Vlad Richter, and I'm, as Jeremy said, the founder and CEO of Zenput. And Zenput is a top-ranked operations execution platform for restaurant, convenience stores, and grocers. We work with the likes of Domino's, Chipotle, PF Chang's, Five Guys, KFC, so on and so forth, right? And a little over 60,000 locations across about a little over 100 countries. And what we really do is we make sure that our operators keep their restaurants in tip-top shape in terms of food safety compliance, the brand standards that they need to follow. Effectively, throughout the day, we deliver messages and tasks to employees of what they need to do. They hop into the application, they get the work done, and then they kind of move about their day to focus on serving the customer and making great food.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I know we've had a lot of different people either on the podcast or just in my walk that have tried to solve this problem, because I think it is an issue of task management and consistency. I know that you guys work with quite a few chains, which is always the challenge as you get out there, is how do I make sure that the store in Atlanta does it the same way as the store in Los Angeles, as well as the same way as the one in Dallas. Tell me a little bit about the inception of where Zenput came from, and a little bit of you know, why did you even start it? Is that really to solve what I was just alluding to?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And the story goes back actually quite a few years to Dallas, of all places. When I was living in Dallas back in 07, 08, I was working for a company that was providing energy efficiency services to a lot of the similar sort of restaurant retail customers. And effectively, what we did back then was we helped them understand their energy usage, and we'd help them turn around and, you know, put in smart energy devices to lower the energy impact, because energy is not cheap, right? And we would sign contracts for 50 stores at a time, right? You name it. Back then it was Starbucks, it was Wendy's, it was CC's Pizza, and so on and so forth, right? And every time we'd have to deploy one of these locations, we'd have to figure out what it looked like and what the environment was like. And so our technicians would go in the field, and they would come back to me with a digital camera or the SD card from the digital camera. They'd drop it on my desk, and I would be looking at, you know, 700 photos of 50 different Starbucks's. And the problem with that was that I would connect back with the teams at our operators, and I'd say, at our brands, and I'd say, hey, you've got to have a better way of doing this. Like, how do you guys manage work across so many locations when you need something instantly, or you would need something verified? And the answer was like, well, I'll just drive around and figure out what's going on.
Yeah. So funny that that's really the way that they did their task management and their it's like, oh, we're just going to show up at the store and we're going to go walk around. And I promise you the consistency is going to be great with that, right?
Yeah, yeah. And listen, and operators for many, many, for the last 30, 40 years, love to touch and feel things, right? So they love to be in the place inside those stores. They want to, you know, they want to visually see it. But the reality is that, you know, most of these businesses have scaled pretty dramatically, right? And you look at all these chains that are, you know, Starbucks today is at 12,000 locations plus or 14,000 locations plus in the United States. Chipotle is now across 3,000, you know, and so you have a continuous scale thing that, as more restaurants and as more stores come online, the problems get infinitely more complex, because there's always some location, you know, in some small town in, say, Oregon or Washington, that you just don't get to as often. And sometimes you let things slip, and you don't want to let things slip, right? You want to make sure that everyone's executing at their best. You know, to your point earlier, when I go to one of those locations, it doesn't matter if I'm in Dallas or if I'm in Oregon, somewhere in Oregon, I want to make sure I have the same experience there.
Yeah, no, and so you started to, and I apologize, I cut you off. You know, so you were doing this energy management, and you saw that this was a problem. Where did the technology come in? Are you a technologist by trade? Are you just an entrepreneur, problem solver, and then you go figure out how to do it? Talk to me a little bit about kind of that inception story, because I know from listening to our audience or talking to our audience, seeing some of the feedback, they love to hear kind of how, you know, everybody knows it's this, the some friends of mine always joke about it. It's like, I wish I would have invented the umbrella that goes inside of a, you know, a cocktail at the resorts, because it's like, I could be a millionaire, because everybody knows, oh, that's really cool. Everybody knows that this is a problem, but you took, you know, you took the chance on yourself and some of your team to figure out how to solve it in a pretty significant way. So talk to me a little bit about where that came from.
Yeah. So there's an interesting story here. There was kind of a false start initially, and then many years later, got going. So back in about 2008, I thought I would try to solve this problem. But the reality was that the mobile platform wasn't there yet. The iPhone had just come out, and there weren't applications yet that were built on top of it. The only people that had the iPhone, I remember, was like the CEO of our company and maybe a couple other folks. It was expensive, and why would you buy it? It doesn't have a keyboard. It's crazy, right? Mm-hmm. So took a little bit of a stab, thought about building it for some tablet devices. Didn't amount to much of anything. And the reality, though, is that I wasn't a developer. I had some technical understanding and expertise, but I wasn't going to be the individual that was going to get in there and actually start building a product together. So fast forward to about 2012, I met my co-founder, John Mills, and John and I started talking about, you know, building tools for people that didn't work behind a desk. And I talked to him about this experience that I had at the company I worked at in Dallas. And at the time, he was building technology for grocery distributors. Okay. Distributors in the grocery space. And so we looked at that, man, like, we could do something for these folks that wasn't there before, right? So much of the technology that was created for you and I sitting behind a desk was created in the 90s. Word, PowerPoint, Excel, you know, all those things that we love so much. But the folks that have to run around and get work done in the field don't have that. And so John and I started talking about it in 2012, and we said, hey, let's go after this. And we got going. I think the first lines of code were written in December of 2012. So we're not that far away from our kind of 10-year anniversary, if you will. And we got going. We picked up, I think it was an early, it took us about a year. We had some unusual customers in kind of a bunch of different areas. But one of our first customers in the space was, I think maybe January, February 2014, was a Papa John's franchisee out of Tampa. Run by the operators of Bruce Ogle and the owners of Jordan Dorsch. And so we connected with them. He said, yeah, I've had this problem. I've been thinking about ways to solve it for the 2021 stores I have in Tampa. This is interesting. Let me help you guys, give you some feedback and get up and running. And so we did that. And it was, you know, it was a little bit slow initially, right? You get, you know, get one franchisee here, a second one there, and you start to kind of build and understand the use cases. And over time, we just continued to really listen to the customer base and kind of take our vision of what we thought should happen and say, okay, does this align with what an operator needs? Is this actually what somebody in the restaurant space is going to use on a regular basis? And so that became kind of moving forward from there. We we closed a little bit of funding initially in 2014 and then did a Series A in 2016, but off and running today. The company is a little over 130 people. We sort of have a hybrid workforce between, we've got offices in San Francisco, Atlanta, and Guadalajara, Mexico, but then really our remote team members at this point are actually the largest office that we have. I think they make up roughly 60 or 65 people in the company.
Yeah. Well, I think the pandemic probably had a little bit to do with that, but yeah, that's great. I have, there's a ton of questions I have, Vlad, because I've watched multiple people try and tackle this solution, you know, I know that you and I just met as we were about to record today, but I've been doing this for 25 years, so I've seen people try. And then the flip side of things that I couldn't help but think about is prior to the pandemic, definitively, and even during the pandemic, there's been a lot of reluctance to take on technology solutions. Did you find that was that was an issue when you guys first started? Because a lot of the restaurant operators, back to your point of, they have a paper checklist of the bathroom checks or the line checks or whatever else, and so they've got some system that you're trying to supplant with a piece of technology that they oftentimes are, you know, restaurant vertical definitively has been a laggard historically A little bit of that's changed with the pandemic, but did you experience that when you guys were out there in the market for the first time? It's just the laggard idea of why do we really need this? What's that look like, and what's it really going to solve for us?
Yeah, I mean, dead on. So I remember in the early parts of 2016 when we sort of we had some other industries that we were serving with the product, but we decided to cut all those off and really focus on anyone in the food service world, which for us, you know, today we're about 80% or about 80% of our locations are in a restaurant, and about 20% are mixed between grocery and convenience. And one of the early things people said to us was, well, hold on, how am I supposed to use this? I don't have a tablet in my location, and I don't plan on ever getting one, right? Maybe one out of 10 prospects we talked to back then said, oh, I have tablets, or I'm about to buy some, right? And so those folks would get real excited about what are the different ways I could use it, right? I could use it for operational purposes. I could use it for supply chain purposes. I could use it for, you know, training purposes. And so we did really well with some of those folks, but we had 4 or 5 out of 10 that would tell us, you know what, in the next few years we'll buy them. And we'd have probably another 4 or 5 out of 10 that would say, I'm never going to buy a tablet. It's never going to happen. No way, no how, right? It was a bit of a slow movement, I think, in some ways between 2016 to 2018. And end of 2018, beginning of 2019, things started to change, and the pandemic sort of, you know, kind of took it into overdrive. The story flipped a little bit. It started to get to the point where in 2019, about 4 or 5 out of 10 prospects we talked to had tablets at the locations. Yep. And then the other 5 said, okay, we're going to get them in the next couple of years. Now they're a little bit more, in there. But I think in some ways this industry has been tough to get a central product in this industry that says, hey, this is the solution that everyone uses. Like when you look at so many other industries, you can look at construction verticals, healthcare, whatever it may be, there's always kind of a big player in the space that says, okay, they've built up the core solution that everyone most people in the industry need to use. And then they do a lot of sort of additional products, kind of ancillary products to kind of build out a whole suite. Yep. And the challenge in the restaurant space has been that like there hasn't been one of those companies, right? You've got sort of 3 different things happening. You've got the front of house solutions that are driven by point of sale and are more focused to the customer. You've got the employee oriented ones that deal with workforce management and training and scheduling. And then you have the back of house solutions that are more about the restaurant itself, right? Compliance issues, the operational stuff that we do, the supply chain angles. Right. And so you almost need like 3 different big players to kind of develop and have kind of an expertise in those different areas.
Well, and I remind our own team members at times that, you know, at the restaurant vertical, you know, they're the second largest employer in the country behind the U.S. government. And, you know, the U.S. government's the government, so they're going to do their thing based on, you know, good or bad or indifferent. They're going to have some consolidation because they've got some modicum of control, whereas the restaurant vertical, you know, 600,000-700,000 restaurants across the U.S., they're not. I mean, there's no dominant restaurant either. I mean, even McDonald's or Starbucks, you know, 2 of the largest, they may be able to deploy something like what you guys have, but that, you know, the McDonald's is probably not going to do the same thing that Starbucks is going to do. Is not going to do the same thing that Burger King is going to do. They need to solve the problem. But they also feel like they have some unique special sauce. That's the other thing, having been in the restaurant industry for a long time, is everybody's got their own special sauce that they think they can do it better, different, and smarter. Have you found that to be the case in talking with your restaurant operators?
Yes. So
I mean, we chuckle because we deal with it all the time. But I think if restaurant operators really were to sit down and think about it, they do think that they've got special sauce or they've got a better way to solve the problem than most. So I'll let you finish. Sorry about that.
And listen, Jeremy, they should actually look at it from the most literal point that you said. Some of them do actually have special sauces, right? There are brands that have phenomenally special sauce. But the way you make that sauce, the way you make sure that the people are getting the work done, the way you make sure that the compliance portion of it is followed, the way you communicate to your team members, that doesn't really change business to business. I mean, the reality is that I've got to be there at 5, 6, 7 in the morning. I've got to step prep for the day. I've got to make sure that, you know, things are put together appropriately. But my secret sauce should be exactly what I'm sort of literally stating here, which is what is the sauce that goes on my burger, on my taco, on my burrito, on my pizza, whatever else it is. That's why I come back there. And I come back there as a consumer because of, the experience I have there. But we try to get to that, down to the sort of the essence and the first principles of the problem whenever we talk to our customers, and try to understand, mm-hmm. What is it that you're really trying to solve? Like, forget for a second how you've been solving it, right? Because you're going to move to technology and that's going to change. That's going to open up avenues that you didn't have before. But what are you trying to change? And would you at least listen to us on the potential that, hey, we do have tens of thousands of locations and hundreds of thousands of users that touch our product on a regular basis? We might give you a couple pointers that you could take away from it. And I think when you approach it in sort of an open arm type of conversation, and you're not telling people what to do, but you're just consulting with them, they actually are relatively open to it, right? It's once in a while, you always find someone that just refuses to change, but that person is still, faxing things to other people.
Yeah, I love that. One of the questions as you were kind of going through the product that I had is I've seen a lot of people, and my guess is because of compliance, that tried to solve some of the food temp monitoring, refrigeration monitoring, line check monitoring stuff, that a lot of those back of the house solutions tried to solve that. Talk to me a little bit. Do you guys solve that as well as the task management? You kind of gave us a broad swath of really the three different consumers within the brand. You've got your front of the house, you got your back of the house, you got your employee management. There's a lot of different constituencies, and every one of them have their own set of needs and set of desires and set of business challenges. The front of the house needs to stay clean. It needs to, and we'll probably talk here in a little bit about kind of how COVID has pivoted your guys' business. But, you've got the front of the house that has a need. You got the back of the house that has a need. But I found that a lot of people try to solve the temp monitoring and really try to use that temp monitoring to do some of the task and workforce management in the kitchen, but it never flowed through to the front of the house. Is that, talk to me a little bit about what that looks like within Zenput and what you guys have done to solve any of that.
Yeah, sure. So we, as I was saying earlier, we spend a lot of time talking to our customers and trying to understand the problems. And we look at usage inside the product, and we're seeing people doing a lot of running around and grabbing, manual temperature checks. We thought to ourselves, well, where are you grabbing this, right? And they would tell us, well, it's in the refrigerator, the freezer, the ambient temperatures, or whatever it may be, the make line. We said, well, why don't we just put sensors in that place and sort of, in some ways cannibalize our core solution to be used less for the purposes of more automation, so that you can free up people to do more impactful, more useful work in the environment than just checking temperatures. And mm-hmm. so we launched that, actually, to be honest with you, the beta for the product was supposed to go live, I think it was the week or two before the shutdown around March 13th of 2020. And we looked at ourselves and thought, well, don't think anyone's going to be letting anyone into a store to go install this. Never mind, mm-hmm. many, many, many restaurants were immediately being closed. However, in the second half of this past year in 2021, it's sort of been kind of the, we sort of officially launched in the beginning of 21. And then it's just taken off. We had probably our best quarter yet in Q4 with the amount of stores that want to deploy this. And there's immense value in it, sort of on three fronts, right? One is I'm freeing up my people to do anything else besides this, right? And if mm-hmm. I have to spend 15 minutes a day, four times a day checking this, that's an hour of labor that you're getting back a day. 30 hours of labor that you're getting back across a week. Two is the immediate reaction when something is when gone wrong. The amount of times, shockingly, that we have run into during a pilot, somebody that was leaving a store and didn't quite close the refrigerator door, mm-hmm. or the refrigerator went down at night and it notified the right individuals, they were able to go in there and save thousands of dollars worth of inventory. And the third part is, per pure compliance side, right? You're sort of taking the human side, the human portion out of the equation. And you as a quality manager, as an operator, as a VP of ops, really have insights into saying, okay, great, like we're at where we should be across the board for yeah. all of our restaurants, and we only need to manage by exception. So it's actually gone tremendously well for us, and it's been adopted well by our brands. A little bit more work than pure software, right? Because you've got to install the actual sensors, and we've got some yep. customers that do it themselves, and we've got some that say, hey, can you get a technician in here that can get this done in 30 minutes? My people are too busy.
Right. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Before we get too deep into the recording for today, I wanted to remind you guys of one of the partners that was on the show back in April. The founder of Pop Menu, Brennan, came on and we were talking about reputation management and really managing your online presence. And I know for myself, one of the things that I always look for before I'm going out to a new restaurant or to any restaurant for that matter is kind of where they're at from a presence perspective. What does their menu look like on the web? And so the guys at Pop Menu have done a fantastic job of really managing their way through that. And so if you guys haven't already checked out the podcast that dropped back in April, go check it out. And they partnered with us on the podcast to offer $100 off of your first month if you go to popmenu.com/tech guys and check their stuff out. Great company, great product, and I would recommend anybody take a look at it. I'm going to take a step back and just ask you, you know, so you talked about kind of some of the early days, Vlad, of what it is that you guys do. Walk me through what Zenput looks like to an operator. You know, so I'm the front desk manager and I'm dealing with the front desk. What kind of things are they using the product for? Give me some of the use cases. You know, we dug into some of your latest products of the kitchen management or the temperature monitoring, but that it doesn't sound like the inception nor where you guys have gotten the largest penetration. So talk me through, what does it look like from an operator operator's perspective? What types of things are you solving? And then what are the end results for those same operators when they deploy the solution?
Yeah, sure. So I'm going to talk in sort of broad strokes. Each brand that adopts maybe adopts in kind of different stages, but they're usually the sort of perfect movement I'll walk you through.
Okay.
You know, initially, the biggest thing that, you know, the sort of foundational thing that any brand has to solve is around, you know, the food safety and compliance side of it, right? Making sure temperatures are appropriate, making sure you're doing those checks, making sure what the health department comes in or the auditors from your own brand come in, that you're tip-top on that, right? And so what happens there is relatively straightforward, right? I've got our application is really mobile-first. So we do have desktop versions as well, but probably 99.8% of our usage happens on the mobile device.
Okay.
And so they've either got it on a shared tablet or they've got it sometimes even on their phones. But you basically walk in, you're doing the things you're supposed to do at 9 o'clock, you know, or whatever the time is, 8:30, 9 o'clock, you'll get a little beep and it says, okay, great, you've got to go, you know, check the temperature of these 7-8 things, and you've got to verify 8 or 9 other things related to opening this morning. Well, maybe it's post-open, depends what kind of what you're serving. And so that'll happen kind of initially. And that's usually the great sort of foundational piece that we try to work with our customers on. Because if you start to have a behavior of, I need to use the application multiple times a day, people start actually, the people at the restaurants go back to their GMs, they go back to their district managers or their VPs and say, hey, why don't we use it for other things that, you know, would be super helpful to us? So what happens beyond that, you know, I think you were saying on some of the front desk side, you know, we naturally fall into a lot of marketing initiatives or LTOs. Hey, we've got a great promotion going out for the Super Bowl, right? You know, buy one, get one free taco or buy one, get one free burrito, whatever it may be. You got to deploy that to 3,000 restaurants. You want to make sure that the signage was delivered. It's in the right language. It's being put up appropriately, because you're about to spend millions upon millions of dollars, you know, advertising this promotion, both, you know, online, TV, wherever you're doing it. The worst thing you could have happen is someone gets to the location and isn't even aware of it, right? That sort of that last foot, or it's not there, right? So the verification of LTOs and the deployment of those LTOs or any sort of marketing initiatives are really big usage for us, right? And that'll come in sort of the ways maybe you would kind of anticipate it, right? Effectively, you get in there and it's Tuesday morning and you get a message and says, hey, you're getting new marketing material today. This is what it looks like. Here's the video for how to install it once or put it up. Once you've done so, can you please take some pictures or videos that you can share back with us? And so we know that you've gotten it done appropriately. And if you didn't get it or something went wrong, you know, you'll answer that appropriately and it'll create additional workflow to kind of resolve the issue, you know, outside of... it'll resolve the issue as needed between the teams in the head office and at the restaurant level. And I think the last part of it is, you know, so we kind of covered the regular usage that happens. We kind of covered the sort of event-driven usage or marketing-driven usage that ends up coming up, as well as the kind of the standard operational stuff, opening, closing procedures. The last part is really more about the store is communicating things that are one-off back to HQ. And so like we're starting to see a lot of our customers adopt the ability to kind of say, look, I want to build out some really simple processes around maintenance requests, around supply requests, around things that the store or the restaurant really needs at the moment. And so they want to raise their hand and say, hey, look, you know, I just did my temp check, but I just realized, you know, we're missing, I don't know, we broke two buckets of XYZ, and I'd love someone to send me some new ones, right? And they'll quickly, you know, communicate that through the application. And then that'll kick off a process for again, somebody in the field or back at the HQ to turn around and place that order to make sure that they're getting what they need.
Okay, yeah. Love that. So what, I guess in general, what's the end result for the operators? Other than, I mean, I think that the easy one off the top of my head is the consistency. The other thing that as I was listening to you kind of describe what it looks like, and we've got a product that we sell called Recipe Viewer, and you know, it really replaces, it's a digital recipe book. And in the past, people would have, you know, paper recipe books or laminated recipe books, and they'd put them in the kitchen, and the cooks would get lazy and they would stop remembering to look at the book, and they would just go off of memory. But once you put it kind of into their workflow every day, instead of them memorizing it, they just look at it because it's easy. I can see based on your description that if it just becomes part of their workflow and it's easy to not have to remember that, it's kind of popping up to you, say, hey, go do the bathroom check. Hey, go make sure that you've done your side work from this. Hey, go make sure that you've checked the temperature on this. Those kind of things. It turns into a little bit of that task workforce management that they don't necessarily have to remember. What end results are they getting other than the consistency from that? Is it the communication? Is it the, you know, talk to me a little bit about what that looks like.
Yeah, sure. So I think there are sort of, there are the immediate tangential benefits, and then there are like the second order benefits.
Okay.
Right. So the immediate tangential benefits, like tangible benefits that you're getting out of it, is that you're saving your people time. Right, you're not kind of bouncing back and forth. You know, they're getting things done in 10 or 15 minutes that would have usually taken them, you know, 45 minutes to an hour. So that's you know, legitimately there. Yep, it's huge, and probably say the safest ones. The temp monitoring portion of it, I think, is pretty straightforward. Right, God forbid any sort of refrigerator goes down, you're saving on inventory there. That's also a no-brainer. That you only need to save one of those in a year. One of those instances in a year. And or one issue of somebody not closing the refrigerator the whole way in the evening before that sort of pays for itself, not just for that year, but sometimes multiple years, depending on what kind of inventory you have. Now.
Besides the guest safety alone, that there's that too. So exactly. I'm sorry, you know.
Exactly. And I would say that the third part of it is, like you said, the consistency piece of it, but there's also just kind of a, it's because it all centralizes in one spot. You don't have this issue of, you know, a district manager either driving to his or her 8 stores or restaurants, or texting everyone, going back and forth, making phone calls, trying to figure out if they actually dealt with what they were supposed to deal with. You end up saving a lot of back and forth for that individual. They've got a mm-hmm. central place they can look at and say, okay, great, all of this is done, phenomenal. So the next time they go in there, they can focus on more important things. Let me spend a little bit of time training our new people in here, you know, kind of doing a little bit rah, 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 and make sure we have a lot more enthusiasm in the brand.
I didn't even consider that. Yeah, that means you've just given them back time, and so now they can do. Now they're not drill sergeants. They're there to coach, and they're there to deal with guests, and they're there to deal with those kind of things. So love that. Yeah. Sorry, I'll let you keep going.
Yeah, I think the second order effects that, you know, once you start using this for a couple months or a couple quarters, and you get that like raw behavior of using it on a regular basis, and everyone's executing, well, the intended benefit does actually come out of it, which is now like you're delivering more consistent results, and we've seen this across a couple brands where we had dug into it. They're getting better guest satisfaction ratings out of it, right? Because like there's just underneath the hood, the back of the house and even the front of the house end up operating in a really standardized way. And because they're doing that, that means the place is probably a little bit cleaner, things mm-hmm. are moving a little bit more efficiently. And that takes, like, that doesn't happen in week one, right? That we're there to breed habits for the brand that they probably have some already, they have those today, but they want to kind of take that to the next level. And that's what we're there for, right? And so those habits turn into better guest satisfaction, which usually turns into higher ticket volumes and more profit out of one of those places. And that's kind of what we hear from folks today, because it's just a way of running your business that makes sense no differently than, you know, than many of us do with email or text message or whatever else that we're using in our daily lives.
I love that. So I'm going to pivot just a little bit and just ask, what did COVID do for your guys' business? What did it do in a good way? What did it do in a bad way? And then, quite frankly, what did it do for the operators that without your tool, it would have really hurt their business going into the pandemic?
Yeah, so we had sort of two movements of the pandemic. The first one was like the first, call it 60, 90 days. And that was not, I don't think that was pleasant for anyone in the country.
Yeah.
But for us as a business, that was the first time in the company's history. You know, we were not closing any new business. We lost, you know, a handful of customers at the time whose contracts were coming for renewal. And who's going to renew a contract, you know, 3 weeks into a pandemic when everything shut down? This wasn't the top of their mind. And so we took a little bit of a hit there. But what happened was our reaction immediately was, okay, well, let's see what we can do to help people out, because we don't have much else going on at the moment. We can do something for folks. And we decided to kind of offer like free free usage of the product for COVID-based reasons and a little bit beyond that. And that helped us about, maybe I think it was roughly about 69 days in, people said, okay, well, now that we're reopening back up and I've got to do all these checks and I've got to make sure all these processes are working, I need something. But their business was suffering and we felt like, okay, it's going to be hard for us to kind of, you know, collect any new sales out of this. In the meantime, we'll just provide something useful to the industry. We had a lot of restaurants, a lot of chains that took advantage of that. And it turned into, you know, a year later, 6 months later, it turned into some phenomenal relationships for us and partnerships with these brands that have been, you know, fruitful in both directions. But the other thing that happened was that it kind of, you know, I think it was by mid to late summer, it expedited decision-making for a lot of the brands that just realized how far behind they were in terms of being able to communicate, in terms of being able to get this work done, because they couldn't even, you know, so many of their field staff were grounded and had to be sitting at home when everyone else was at the restaurant working, and they had no way to kind of get that visibility. And so for us, business actually went a little bit crazy. And the back half of 2020 and all of 2021 has been really solid for us. It's part of the reason we've more than doubled the company in size on the employee count. At this point, we've more than doubled the amount of locations we've served. I think our usage of the product at a restaurant level on a day-to-day basis has nearly tripled in the course of the last 18 months. And that's because so much of it was, hey, we've got new procedures to run. But the more you put into this, more you put into the product, the more you use it, the more people go back and say, well, I don't want to do this other thing somewhere else. Just drop it in here, right?
Love that. Love that. And I would say almost every one of our guests this last 18 months that has a product that isn't just a consultant group or something like that has said the same thing, that they, you know, they'd be in negotiations with these people. They'd be talking to people for a long time. And then finally the pandemic hit and they realized, I really got to do something about this, because if I don't, not only am I going to be far behind my competitors that already have adopted it, but there's lots of things that they had time on their hands too, so they could figure out how to make it work when things were good, you know, and however you want to define good, they were so busy that they didn't want to adopt anything, you know, and that's been, both talking to our operators and to other partners like yourself, they've said exactly that. What from a product perspective, if anything, Vlad, did you guys bring about that might have enhanced or helped the operators from a you know, is there any unique things that you saw people that either were already on the product before the pandemic or people that adopted it that you're like, I never would have considered that our product could do this, but these guys took it in a unique way to really help, you know, help their operators to operate differently and better as the pandemic has happened? Because I think there's been a lot of surprises that all of us have had, and I'd love to hear any unique story that you might have from any of your operators that you think would be good for our audience to think about.
You know, I think as you started asking that question, I'm racking my brain for what came out of it. I think there was the natural sort of like adaptation to whatever we need to do COVID-wise, right? Like the temperature checks of people, the additional cleaning procedures, whatever it was. The big thing for us was we always had like a set of customers that were our kind of top users, right? They'd use it more than others. And they were really kind of leaders in that space, right? And that maybe amounted to 5 or 10%, you know, of your customer base, which by the way, naturally makes sense, right? Like one tenth of your customer base is likely to be in the top 10%, right? Just to kind of aligns that. What sort of fascinated us, and I made that point about the 3 to 4xing on the usage side, was that everybody else, or just about everyone else in our customer base, sort of propelled themselves into that top 10%, and we had to like redo what we thought was normal, you know, cadence of usage of the product, or at least everyone got to more of an ideal state. I don't know if, you know, I kind of think about this at the moment, but I don't know if today there was something sort of deeply unique that came out of the way that you were using us. It's just that it felt like most of our customers sort of woke up and said, okay, now I can use this for everything else that I've been sort of putting off for a long time. That was I think that in my mind was probably the biggest driver, the biggest change that happened. And it pushed us to think about sort of the additional products. Like I was mentioning, you know, the temp monitoring solution, we were only putting into beta at the time, you know, right before the pandemic shut down. And then we had a full product come this year. And so much of it was driven off of the feedback with customers, and it's been, hey, well, I'm doing all these other things in Zenpa today. You know, what if you guys built a product for X, Y, or Z down the line that could really focus on us optimizing this? And that's probably the space that we're thinking about more now, is that with the kind of great usage that we have in the system today, is what happens next? Like, what are we doing, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, and how do we kind of keep pushing on that front to kind of keep expanding the capabilities, right? I mean, like, you know, small data point, right? Our restaurants take something like about 15 million photos or 10 to 15 million photos a month that gets sent into Zenput, right? There's a lot of things that you could do with that photo, with that image recognition that can sort of even improve the experience for the people that need to look at some or all of these. And that's where we're starting to spend our time, is going, okay, well, now that everyone does have heavy volume usage, what do we do with it to kind of help them analyze and get to an answer faster than instead of manually going through a lot of these things?
Love that. I was, funny enough, that was going to be my next question, is where do you see the product going? And it sounds like whether that be AI or some kind of optical recognition, trying to figure out where are the problems and how do you alert people to them before somebody has to manually sit and go through what you were talking about, you know, 800 photos that would be painful to do if it were me. That sounds really cool. What did I miss in our conversation, Vlad? What are the things that we should have talked about that I not asked questions about? I mean, it sounds like you guys have got a fantastic product that if restaurant operators aren't looking at your product or somebody else is doing what you're doing, they're definitely behind, and it definitely seems like a huge opportunity to create some consistency and create some capabilities for people. But what are the things that I miss bringing up?
You know, I think we kind of hit on a lot of the relevant points. I mean, so much of what we do is focused on the people, right? I mean, I tell this to our team all the time, is that, you know, my responsibility is the 130 plus team members that we have at the company today, and making sure that, you know, that they're happy, they're fulfilled in the work that they're doing, but also that they should be focusing on the, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that are using our product and going, how do we make it easier for them? How do we make it more efficient? How do we make them enjoy their, you know, sort of get technology out of the foreground and into the background where you don't think about it, right? We've all had tools that we use that you kind of dread opening up, and then you have other ones when you sort of use them, you no longer think about it, right? I mean, like a text message, sending a text message 15, 20 years ago on a numerical keyboard while you're sitting there like Morse code style trying to type it all out is a lot different than today, where like now it's become like our standard of communication, right? Everything seems to be text first and voice second, right?
Absolutely.
Or even voice recordings, right? I mean, like I see a lot of the younger generation do a lot of like voice memos back and forth, which we didn't, you know, that wasn't something like a voice memo. I mean, sometimes people in the 90s walked around with like a cassette recorder and would record their voice for, you know, notes for later. But I think we covered a lot of it. And I the part that we kind of probably didn't touch on as much is like really, really spending time to make sure that, you know, technology is an enabler and an improvement on whatever it is you're doing, and not a blocker and not a sort of mountain to climb over.
I love that. Well, and I love the idea that you know, your job is to focus on your team, let them focus on what the customers are looking for, and really to help make the technology ubiquitous. And you know, it really just needs to be part of their workflow, and they need to want to pick it up. That it's not this, you know, this deal that's coming in, this overlord that's coming in and trying to yell at them and scream at them to not do their stuff. But it really becomes, oh yeah, that's going to really help me do my job better, take care of my guests better, and they see that. So I love that philosophy that you have. Vlad, how do people get in touch with Zen, you know, with you guys as it were? How do they engage with Zenput? How do they engage, figure out where the product's at, how it could benefit their business if they wanted to, you know, if they're sitting here listening going, you know what, this is awesome, how do I get started?
Yep. So the, you know, best place is obviously on our website for folks that want to sort of asynchronously look at it whenever they want to, and that's zenput.com, zenput.com. On there we've got all sorts of content that's there for people to look at. We've got webinars on the product tours and how people are using it. We've got content with customers that kind of talk about, hey, here's what I did, and this is something interesting I wanted to share to the world. We had a pretty phenomenal kind of virtual conference that we did back in September that we're hoping to do in person, if not this year, then maybe next year. But we had hundreds of people attend that on the virtual side. And if you want to get in contact with us, just email us at hello@zenput.com, and we'll be happy to get engaged and hop on a call for those that, you know, where it makes sense and when the time's right, can also spend some time in person. But yeah, those are usually the best places, is, you know, take a look at the site, peruse a little bit, see what's interesting to you. And then from there, you know, as you're ready to kind of chat a little bit further, reach out, send us an email. That hello at Zenput email goes to like six people at once. So usually somebody hops into it immediately, and we'll direct you to the right individual to spend some time with.
Love it. Well, I can't thank you enough, not only for what you have done, you know, to help get people educated on the podcast, but really helping operators. I've spent my entire career, you know, and really the fabric of a lot of communities is the restaurants that are there, and the way that they can be operating better, and the way that they can continue to be successful is helpful to all of the local communities that we're all in. And so I appreciate the fact that you guys are doing that. To our audience, guys, we know that you guys have got thousands of choices of podcasts to listen to each and every week, and so we appreciate you guys taking some time to sit and listen to us. If you haven't already done so, please go out and give us a rating on your favorite podcast player, because it helps others to hear and see the content that we're putting out there, because there's a lot of noise out in the space, and the more that we can get people to know about products like Zenput and others, the better off we will all be. Again, share the podcast with your friends and family that you think would be interested in it. And one last ask I would have for our audience members is, we do send out a once a month newsletter on the first Monday of every month that is really a amalgamation of everything that we put out there, both the blog post and the podcast. And so we're not going to spam you. We're not going to send you anything from any of our guests. It's really just going to be all of the content we put out on the blog for the month, and it keeps you up to date with all that we have going on at the Restaurant Technology Guys. Vlad, thank you very much for your time, and to our audience, make it a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.